And 2099, and I think a little further back than that, yeah.
Now, Mr. Martin, you had access to passwords from Ratco. Is that right?
Yes.
And do you have information about Ratco's systems from the time when you worked there as a security administrator?
Sure. Every security admin should know at least what kind of systems they're running. They should know what kind of security problems might exist so that they can identify and fix them. Of course, if the boss is a dork and won't give you the budget or the time and keeps irrationally demanding that you do this and that and make them coffee, then the systems aren't going to be secure.
Ms. Granick, would you direct your witness to watch his mail?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I just have one more question. Mr. Martin, did you hack into the RATCOM Springfield Airport computers to get back at...
No, I did not.
...Mr. Thieme?
Not at all.
No further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Salgado?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Remember, just yes.
Mr. Martin, it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak to you.
I wish I could say it was mutual.
Sir, do you go by Roadblock or R-Block?
Sometimes on IRC, yes.
Let me ask you something. One of the things you testified to begin with early on is that you feel no ill will towards Ratco or towards Mr. Thieme.
Not currently.
It took you a little time to get over the firing, though, didn't it?
A little time.
But he was, as you put it, an asshole.
Hey, that's pretty accurate, yeah.
You still feel that way.
Yeah.
You were pretty hot on the IRC when you were talking about Richard Morton.
Well, yeah.
And, in fact, you were making threats to get back at him, weren't you?
Originally, but it was just anger. You know, I didn't really mean it.
It was just anger. Well, let me ask you something about whose fault it is about Tower and the tragedy that became the database there. If I understand correctly, you're telling these folks that it's not your fault. It's this guy named Primate's fault.
Objection. That misstates the evidence.
Are you saying that it was your fault?
I never said that.
Okay. Are you saying it's somebody else's fault?
Yes.
Are you suggesting that somebody else might have been Primate?
I think it very well could have been, yes.
And when it came to your getting fired, was that your fault as well?
I don't think so.
That was Richard Thieme's fault, wasn't it?
Yes. He was pretty mad that I kind of read a mail about him and that Michelle girl, his secretary.
And yes, that fine. Do you know who Primate is?
No, I don't.
How long have you had a relationship with Primate?
Well, we've been fighting for about 4 or 5 years at least.
And where do you usually fight?
IRC, email, mail list, bulletin board systems, EverQuest. But that's all.
Your disputes are centered around what?
Everything.
Can you be more specific?
Oh, he's got to be right about everything, and he has to, thump his chest at you no matter what. It's everything from, EverQuest to knowing a Unix command.
Have you ever discussed with him anything about your job, what it is you do?
Not directly with him, but he was on channel when I was, kind of losing my temper a little bit. And I'm sure he read...
Let me ask you another series of questions, sir. Do you live alone? Do you have a significant other? And I remind you, you're under oath.
I have a significant other.
Somebody who lives with you?
Technically, no.
Does your significant other get online and use your computer?
Oftentimes, yes.
On October 23rd, was your significant other online?
I don't recall, but very likely.
Okay.
She liked to check her mail.
Are you married?
No.
Okay. Do you have any kids who live in the house?
None of my own.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Granick, would you like to redirect?
No, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, at this point, the defense rests. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it appears to me that it's time for the closing arguments. Mr. Salgado?
In the interest of time, can we just, Richard, if you could keep yours to 30 seconds, and Jennifer, keep yours under 7 minutes, okay? Is that, does that sound fair? Is that fair to you? Sorry.
I'll keep it brief here. I want to thank you, jurors, and I want to thank especially the defense for attempting to put on the best possible case, the best possible defense for the defendant. For by being able to put together all the evidence that creates the best defense that's possible, it will allow you the opportunity to be able to reach the right verdict, knowing that the best possible case was put together for the defendant. And yet, it is quite clear that this is the individual who had the motive, the skills, and the opportunity to conduct both of these attacks, actually all three of them. The access devices on his computer had him well after his point of termination, and in fact accessed those files, the passwords, well after the date of his termination. He didn't need those password files after the date of his termination. It's not part of his job because he didn't have a job. All the records link him up to Tower Communication. They can link him up to the Guardian block. The IP block goes to Speedrun. The records were clear. Address to his account goes to 123 Tree Street. That's where his computer was. That's where all the files were found. Passwords and IRC chat. I think if you look at the evidence today, you will draw the conclusion that it was Mr. Martin in his residence using his machine. Using his IP address. That's how he could get back at Richard Thiem. They don't explain to you how Primate would have known what IP address to use to insert into the log, or how anybody else would have known what ISP address to insert into the Guardian log. No evidence of that. The only person who would be able to do that would be the defendant through a normal telnet connection using O.J. Simpson's password. It's not the defendant's fault. That's what you hear. That's the defense. It must have been somebody else. In fact, the argument really is, when you carry it to its logical conclusion, the case is too strong against me to be true. No. It's true, and the case establishes it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Salgado. Ms. Granick.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, I told you at the beginning of this case that this was about a rush to judgment. And you can see from the evidence before you that that is so. There were several people who were angry at Mr. Martin and wanted to teach him a lesson. And whoever did this left behind a bunch of speed bump IP addresses and a notation about roadblock in an attempt to frame Mr. Martin. Now, all of these IP addresses that connected are people, either people having access to Tower or false information. Only one of these IP addresses is Mr. Martin's. This information points the finger at Mr. Martin, but if he was the person who had accessed the system, that's the last thing that he would want to do. He had the ability to attack the RATCO servers, but that's not what he did. That's not what he's accused of doing here. Who did this? It's somebody who wanted to frame Mr. Martin. Now, the information you have before you that it was Mr. Martin is completely unreliable. First of all, you have this Bastion log, which is the information that the prosecution wants you to believe shows that Mr. Martin's IP address was connecting to Tower. But the evidence shows that those logs were modified. And if those logs were modified, then you can't believe what they say at all. Okay? That information in those logs could be totally created. Second, you have missing evidence. Where is the evidence from the ISP that shows any connections from that ISP to Tower? You don't have any unmodified logs that came from Speedbump. And finally, you don't have any connections to Guardian, any information that Guardian was accessed without authorization, other than those that are just incidental to someone coming through to access Tower. But the main piece of evidence that you're missing, the smoking gun that is not here, is Mr. Simpson's password. This was necessary to get into Tower, and Mr. Martin didn't have it. There are a lot of other people who would have been able to guess Mr. Simpson's password, or who, through these other IP addresses, may have had access to that password file, but there's no evidence that Mr. Martin had the instrumentality with which this crime was committed. And without that instrumentality, he does not have the ability to have done this crime. So whatever evidence points to Mr. Martin points equally to a frame-up. There's no smoking gun. There's no candlestick here. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, when this case is submitted to you, I hope that you will find my client not guilty. Thank you.
Keep it down to a dull roar. Okay. Jury members, it is time for you to do your thing. And
you
a
have
departure, and a distinct departure from opinion. Go ahead.
Yeah, you have approximately 15 seconds. Okay.
Yes,
guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Come on, just make a decision here.
Hey, no man, boy, you on thin ice. Read them back the charges.
Okay, all right. We have possession of an access device.
Possession of passwords, more than 15 passwords with intent to defraud. We've got unauthorized access to the system.
Let me hand him this.
Here.
Oh.
Well, there's two charges on that last count.
Here, take a look at this.
Yes.
Something about how some software doesn't function properly in the Windows MU.
Again, we're hearing from the people that seem to think they know everything about everything. Just try to remember, yes, we are trying to make this entertaining as well as partially factual. What was the question again?
No, the prosecution goes first, the defense goes second, and then the prosecution gets to go again.
Okay. Thank you.
Twice they go. We go once.
Come on, jury, hurry up. There's beer to be consumed. It seems that the jury has reached a verdict. What we ask for is that we want to do this in the tradition of Caesar's. Since we're in Caesar's Hotel, it's going to be either a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Okay. We, the jury.
Have you reached a verdict?
Yes, we have, Your Honor.
Okay. Your Honor, we have reached a verdict here. We have decided on count one. The defendant is
not guilty. Yes. Shut up, you. All right. On count two of unauthorized computer intrusion, we find the defendant not guilty. On count three, possession of unauthorized access device, username, and passwords, we, the jury, found the defendant guilty as charged.
Intent to defraud. Screw you, buddy.
Can we start over with the first two charges?
Contempt of court. Bailiff.
You're the bailiff.
Yeah.
No. I think we know why.
We'll take him to jail.
All right. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, members of the jury. We're doing your civic duty.
Can we see from the audience in general, can we see a thumbs down for he's guilty and thumbs up for not guilty, just so we can get some? Who's on the unauthorized access counts, who thinks he's guilty? Okay.
We've got too many arms up, okay? All right, let's do this. Everyone raise your left leg up over your head. No, just raise your hand if you think he's guilty on that count. Mm-hmm. On the first, was it first count?
Unauthorized access.
Mm-hmm. Clear, ethically. Jesus.
And who thinks he's guilty on the passwords?
With intent to defraud, come on. Yeah, mm-hmm. Read it. Passwords with intent to defraud.
Yeah, but we didn't focus on that. Mm-hmm. Take him away.
Just so you know.
Court adjourned.
Couple of things I want to bring up here. Just so you know, to finish out the imaginary trial sequence. Of course, Brian did go to jail. He spent many months there. When he came out, he somehow managed to get rid of his girlfriend and had a new friend. Also, the other thing too is that for some reason there was some type of civil suit that went on between an expert witness named John Klein and one Brian Martin. Brian Martin suing for an amount of $5,000. I don't know what that was about. The other final interesting thing in this was it turns out that Brian had been wrong about the identity of who Primate was all along. He thought Primate was a male, for one, and he had no idea that Primate was actually Caitlin, the bailiff, was actually her name. Kind of a little bit of irony there. At this point, I guess we're going to kind of open it up for... one other thing I want to bring up. I know that everyone up here put in a whole lot of work on this, okay? We had a lot of fun and everything. I hope it was entertaining for everyone as well. I want to especially thank Carol Finley for... this is kind of her idea. She wrote a huge amount of this material. She did a great job. I know, it's a tender moment.
They all say that.
So at this point, do we have any questions?
I wish all my juries were like this.
Yeah, the question is, what do the lawyers think about the evidence?
Yes, this was weak evidence. We actually would have had trouble, I think, charging on this with this particular set of facts. And without the logs from the ISP, this would have been real trouble for us. And we would have had to think real hard before we decided to go forward with this. This is such a fiction here. There was so much stuff we would have had to really prove. This would have taken 2 weeks. This would have been a 2-week trial. And you would have heard everything. And there were some elements here that we didn't cover very well, that I really didn't have witnesses for. So, you know, it's something of a fiction, but sort of given what, you know, we created this FAFSA scenario without an answer in mind. We just created a scenario. It was actually our office who came up with the WQ idea in the law so that we weren't just nailing the guy, so you have something to think about. And all that to make it hard. Now, for this crowd, maybe it's not going to be as hard as for a different crowd, but and there would be others that would be going to the other side. So. But I think this was a very tough case for the prosecution to make. And I think one of the things I think we both demonstrated was how difficult it is to deal with surprises in the middle of the trial. You had suddenly this defendant saying, I want to testify, I'm going to ignore your advice and testify. And that actually can be a very nice thing for the prosecution if you're prepared for it. And you can really think about how you're going to attack the person. But it's a horrible situation often for the defense counsel. And you know, one of the things I did during that cross was to start asking questions I had no business asking because I didn't know the answer to them. So I got him to start saying, there is somebody else in the house, probably used the account at that time, all this stuff. Terrible prosecutorial mistake. Should have stayed away from it. Those were questions that the defense counsel might not have.
I want to address about the weakness of the evidence. I'm actually the one who created the evidence, and just so you all know, it's really difficult to create a fictitious crime and then generate evidence to fit that crime, and to have to generate phony logs, phony password files, on and on and on. We tried to make this as realistic as possible. In the real world, you'd have real evidence to look at that would be a lot stronger than what we produced. But for the purposes of this demonstration, we felt that what we were producing was adequate.
I believe Caitlin has a question.
Am I guilty?
No, I think you are guilty of being cute. That is true. And I don't think that Richard could actually, even though you did turn out to be primate, I don't think that Richard could actually go before a jury and actually prosecute you. So I think you're okay. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, whatever. In the back.
Yeah, I actually am. Yeah, that can be a challenge. The question was, how hard is it at times to get ISP logs? Oftentimes, if the victim's late in calling us, even at the point of our beginning the investigation, the logs have already been overwritten. So it can be a real challenge for us. We have to start moving really quickly to get logs preserved and then go get the search warrant or whatever process we might need to get the logs. But that can be a significant investigation.
What you have to show in order to get a subpoena
to get the ISP, what do you have to prove? I think probably Mark Eckenwater covered that earlier today, but the question was, what do you have to prove to get logs from ISP? It depends on what you're trying to get. If you're trying to get somebody's, say, the contents of their email account, so you want to read actual communications from them, the standard's higher than if all you want is for the ISP to tell you who the customer is, identifying information. Obviously, if you're wanting to gather communications that are transmitted in real time, you're trying to grab email as it's hitting the box, we've got a real high show. We have to go get what's known as a wiretap order to do that. If it's already stored, it's already hit the box, you might need to use a search warrant if it hasn't been opened or retrieved by the subscriber. If it has already been retrieved by the subscriber but left there, then we have to show reasonable and articulable facts that the email is relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation to be able to get that. Or we can go in with a subpoena to get those kinds of records, although we have to give notice to the subscriber when we do that.
For the transaction records, they need a subpoena, though.
Transaction records, you need a D order, reasonable, so it's a lesser showing than a search warrant, although a search warrant would work. What prerequisites?
Yeah.
Well,
repeat the question.
I'm sorry, thank you. The question is, what are the prerequisites before we can request under the statute that's available to us that an ISP or other provider would still preserve the records while we go get legal process? The statute's pretty bland in that regard with what's required, but it contemplates that we have an intention to go get a process for it. So the idea would be the preservation letter is out there because you've got an investigation or you've got the open one and you're going to go get a process for it.
The question was, what is his name?
Your name.
Me? It's Simple Nomad. Dude, right here on the badge.
Was
Simple Nomad kidding about the PowerPoint thing? I think I was.
More and more, you're starting to see the kind of display technology in courtrooms. But, an awful lot of judges really like paper, they like files and that kind of thing. So, but for jurors and for witnesses, you're starting to see more and more technical displays of evidence and pictures and photographs and documents. So you do see this, but it's not common.
And Jennifer, what do you
use? We use something called ELMO, which is kind of popular in our courts, which is a thing where you put the piece of paper on it, and it's not a transparency, but the paper, and it projects it on the screen, and that's used pretty frequently.
Paul.
In my opinion, always.
What was it? The question was, how often do they see falsified logs? And what was the answers here?
Well,
never?
My joke is, that's not true. It's not never. You may see it, but it's usually something you can discover is actually.
It's usually the feds.
I think for us, one of the things with how reliable logs are is often where were they before the feds got to them? Because the court and the jurors are going to believe that the feds did their best to preserve them in the state in which they were found. The question is, did somebody have access to them before that to alter them? And that depends on the circumstances under which they were found and whether the box was compromised earlier and that kind of thing.
Repeat the question.
The question was, for example, in other cases, we see, like the O.J. Simpson case, we see how important the chain of evidence is, and with this type of information, it seems like the chain of evidence isn't preserved at all. And in my experience, if the law enforcement handled the evidence, correctly from the time they found it, they wrote it onto the Write Once CD, and they stored it in the evidence locker, all the other arguments about why the log shouldn't be trusted, like somebody else had access to it before the FBI came along and found it, are, in my experience, that's always something where the judge says, you can argue it to the jury, but I'm letting the evidence in. It's never
an admissibility issue. And then the specter that's always raised, where the defense is going to be, it wasn't me, it was somebody else, and you've got these electronic records, so this is something you see challenged.
We got time for a couple more questions. Juror number four.
Well, we would have tried to find primate.
The question was.
Would you have tried to get primate on the stand? And I mean, our investigators would have tried to find who is this guy. I mean, that would have been a lead to trace down. And that's why I'm saying this is so artificial, because we would have done something with primate. Now, it's possible we wouldn't have found it, and then we're stuck in the same situation.
From the defense side, I would say that the answer to the question of whether we would have tried to find primate or not would depend on what my conversations with my client were about the case. So, to be explicit, if my client said, I did it, but I just want to get out of it, then I would not, then it's better to have the empty chair. But if my client's like, I didn't do it, then I, turn over every rock trying to find the person who did, then I bring into court and I ask him, did you do it? And he takes the fifth on the stand, and that's like the, best thing that could possibly happen to you in your whole career.
Yeah.
Back over, right over here.
That's a great question. The question is, how would we have tried this case for people who really didn't know what an IP address was or what telnet was? And the answer, you know, as we were going through this, I just blew over that stuff because you guys knew it, and you would have been out there taking advantage of the free beer before I got to the float my opening. But it is very difficult because most of the people who are going to be in the journal, of course, are people who got in the pool and are actually serving, right? They didn't find a way out from the service, and otherwise have, you know, a sense of obligation to their community. But they're probably not going to have anything close to the sophisticated skills you guys have. So what does that mean? That means I've got to be really simple about how I explain everything, but at the same time try not to bore them to death. So you try analogies, right? And you guys do this when you're talking to management. And we did the same thing.
See, Richard's okay. He's all right. Carol, you had a comment about the expert testimony.
Yes, in one case that I worked on, the expert witness for the prosecution spent about 8 hours testifying, and about an hour's worth of this was describing the LS command and how it worked. It's incredibly tedious, and I didn't think we wanted to hear that.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that's about it. We want to thank everyone for attending. We want to thank everyone here. We got some couple closing words from Jack here.
Okay, I'm going to put back on my black hat role here. Thank you for coming tonight. We're going to start up tomorrow at 8 o'clock with sessions again. I don't know how much of a party is still going on outside, but go enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.